Well, this week actually is a full trip around South Australia and into Broken Hill. So what I've been able to accomplish so far is a meeting or several meetings with key infrastructure people that will be associated with the project moving forward, as well as obviously the important and influential side of the politics from South Australia. So I caught up with several government officials there, brought them up to speed with the project, and of course, while I'm in SA, jump in a car, come up to site, and sort of catch up with the local stakeholders.
Well, let's go back on the project just for a bit of context to those who may have half heard it, may not even heard it before. What is Horsens flagship project nearby, near Broken Hill?
Well, Horsens Iron is located about 70 k's from Broken Hill. It's nearby to Cobalt Blue, who are operating, developing nearby. And what we've got there is a very, very large magnetite, or most people know it as an iron ore project. And we've basically been working on this project for quite some time. I'm relatively new to the company. I joined the company in June, and I'm impressed with what I've seen so far about the project, about the location and the like. So I'm pretty excited moving forward.
What are some of the updates on the project that you have been relaying to key stakeholders, especially since you started in Adelaide? What were you telling them? How it's all tracking?
Well, basically, they need to come up to speed with what the new plans are moving forward. They're fully familiar with the historic workings of what's happened in terms of the technical aspects of the project and how it can influence both the government of South Australia and directly and indirectly. So I brought them up to speed with where we're going. And in terms of where we're going, we're currently, and this is in the public record, we're talking with a number of potential investors. We're after a reasonable size amount of money to complete the feasibility study. And on the back of that, the project would then continue through to engineering, final investment decision, and then into construction.
Going back almost about 8 odd years, I was hearing stories about Horsens Iron and the project back then when it used to be called Carpentaria all those years ago. And it sounded like it was maybe right around the corner, 2022, 2023, back in 2016, and now we're in 2024. Do you feel this project is still on the up and will get up at some point?
Well, I joined the company for a reason, and that's because I certainly believe that's the case. You've got to also remember there was this thing called COVID in the middle of that as well, which certainly didn't help. This is a big project. And when I say a big project, it's recognised by the federal government. It's classed as a major project, one of 18 projects in the country, and that's not just mining, that's big projects. It's a big deal to the federal government and to the governments of New South Wales and to South Australia. And big projects never have little problems. They have big problems. So it's all about de-risking the project. It's all about understanding what our customers on the other end want by way of specification. It's about what's understanding in the ground and being able to tie those two things together with a high degree of confidence moving forward and understanding what the financial model looks like. Ultimately, with a high degree of certainty, it's about de-risking the project. It's about putting in additional smarts, and we've got a number of initiatives going on at the moment, and there'll be the outcomes of those will be coming out to the market intermittently between now and the end of the year.
What were some of those initiatives?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Really, what we've done is we've looked at ways of reducing the schedule, project development schedule, construction time. We've looked at ways of decreasing the risk in terms of the development phase and also into operation. And we've also looked at ways of making it more socially and environmentally sustainable. So issues associated with water quality, quality and quantity, very, very important. And so we're wondering how we can actually reduce the environmental footprint across all the aspects, emissions, water, et cetera, et cetera.
Did you have to do that?
Did we have to do that? Still in question. I think it's incumbent upon the board, and it's a duty of the board to look towards doing those things. I think it's in the best interest of shareholders. It de-risks the project further. And at the end of the day, when we'll be chasing debt finance, the debt financiers, and they'll be global, they won't be local, the debt financiers will be looking at not just the technical and commercial aspects, but they'll also be reviewing the environmental, social and governance aspects of the project.
So when you're working on all those different aspects, is Horsens and the project still under major project status? Is it still under that banner?
Certainly is.
How long does it stay for?
Well, it goes until about mid-next year. I spoke recently to the lady who is our contact point in major projects, and we'll be working together probably early next year to extend that, and she certainly doesn't seem to think that there's any problem in extending that given where we are and what our plans are moving forward.
And right now, just to clarify, is it the bankable feasibility study or the feasibility study?
Well, it's a function of definition. It's a bankable feasibility study once the bank has gone through the feasibility study and has ascertained that it's bankable. But for all intents and purposes, people call it a bankable feasibility, other people call it feasibility, some people call it definitive feasibility study. But it's all about coming to a plus or minus 15% on CapEx. It's about doing sufficient detail within the project to present to the board to reach final investment decision, FID. And it's also the final document that's submitted to the banks to provide, get them to provide us with debt finance.
So while you're working on a feasibility study or bankable feasibility study, whatever the clarification may be, when you're working on a study like that, do current iron ore prices affect a study like that, or is it way too far to be thinking about a fluctuating iron ore price? $140 per tonne at the start of the year, now it's dipped under 100 very recently. Does that play a factor when you're in this early-ish stage of a project like that?
You used the word fluctuation. So, you know, you can't have a... Everyone, when the market's down, and we're seeing the market down again today, when the market's down, everyone tends to be pessimistic. When the market goes up, everyone's in the market. You can't help but make money is the attitude, and it's going to go on forever. The reality is that I've been in the mining industry now for 40 years, and I've seen cycles. I've seen where it's come down hard and fast and where it's climbed up nice and slowly and different variations on that. The thing is, what you have to do is go to experts, independent experts, where you can actually get a fair and reasonable outlook price on the commodity, irrespective of the project, and put that price in to the projected revenue stream, etc., the financial model. And on the back of that, you look at the financial return, and then you play sensitivities. How far down can in our case, the iron ore price come down to before, you know, we have to start looking at cutting back or doing something, and how much money can we make and return for shareholders if it goes the other way?
And on another side of things, regarding when it comes to iron ore, I understand right now there is a stockpile of iron ore in China and then also a stockpile of steel products also in China. Is that a way too earlier thing to be thinking of too when you're in a feasibility study stage, the fact that there's currently a stockpile of iron ore in China, but this is way before anything's getting pulled out of the ground in Horsens?
Yeah, look, I mean, and to quote you, Patrick, you said that the iron ore price has come down heavily just in this last 6, 7, 8 months, and you're right. It can go up just as quickly, or it could go down further. The latest reports I've seen is that the vast majority of steel producers in China are currently non-profitable, which means it goes back to the old simple economics of supply and demand. If they're sub-economic, less steel will be produced, and then all of a sudden, even though the demand's lower, there's not enough steel being produced, prices start to creep. That reflects on all the inputs coming into the steel industry.
So when it comes to the feasibility study, Tom, what happens now? What's the time frame of it? What's the rest of the year look like for Horsens, and maybe even into 2025?
Yeah, well, certainly, as I said, we're looking at bringing in a fair amount of funds from a strategic investor. That will pay for the rest of the feasibility study. The rest of the feasibility study will probably take the best part of 18 months to 2 years. It's a big project. It's a world-class project. After that, we'll complete the discussions with financiers, having started earlier pre the completion of the feasibility study. So we're giving ourselves a 12-month window there. But 6 months after the feasibility study, we're expecting to complete finance. We'll reach FID, financial investment decision, with the board at that stage, and then we'll start to move forward, probably with an initial 6 month engineering period, front-end engineering design, followed by activity commencement on site. And construction is probably going to be the best part of somewhere between 2 and 3 years.
When could you even forecast that something comes out of the ground?
Well, I'm certainly looking at around the 30 mark, 29, 30 mark. And there's a lot to do before then. A lot of dominoes have to fall the right way, particularly those out of our control, such as the equity market we referred to earlier and the general steel, iron ore markets. But we're confident that being cyclical, these things will return in time for when we're ready to go. But yeah, it's a big project. It's certainly an exciting project. It has massive implications for all stakeholders, including people resident here in Broken Hill, as well as the South Australian side of the border and the broader New South Wales government. And of course, the federal government, with its recognition of us as a major project, will certainly benefit from the project as well, directly and indirectly.
And we touched on earlier about how Horsens is looking at the environmental impacts of the mining process, as you've touched on and explained in depth. But with Horsens and what is in the mineral deposit, is there an environmental benefit to what you're pulling out of the ground compared to other iron ores in terms of its actual refining process to be made into steel? Is it more greener, I understand?
Yeah, we're part of the green steel supply chain moving forward.
Right.
And that's a movement that is real and gaining more and more momentum.
What is it?
It's basically a 70% of steel at the moment is being produced by blast furnace. And blast furnaces consume a lot of coal and have exceptionally high emissions. And the steel industry, steel production industry, is one of the biggest carbon emitters, right, along with the cement industry and a few others. From our point of view, by producing a higher grade iron product, and we're talking about in excess of 68, 68.5%, it means that you can circumvent blast furnaces because it's lower in impurities. It can then go through a stage called direct reduction iron, which is DRI pellets, or hot briquetted iron, HBI pellets, and that can go directly into an electric arc furnace. And they're being built more and more, particularly in that Southeast Asian region. They operate more efficiently. They use less energy. That makes them more cost-effective and more environmentally friendly.
And on that side of things, then, in that Southeast Asia area, have you received interest from steelmakers in that part of the world that are looking towards maybe being greener with their production of steel?
Yeah, look, we've spoken to Europeans, Middle East, as well as the Southeast Asians, and they're all being incentivized and penalized in terms of steel moving forward. Sticking with the old method, blast furnace, etc., there's a number of penalties that come in place. You look at the European Union, for example, and they're introducing penalties associated with various metals coming into Europe that have high emissions as a footprint. And they're in fact incentivizing and encouraging greener metals. And steel is certainly one of those. And a similar position in Japan and Korea, where people are looking now at saying, we need to be part of this green supply chain so that we're not penalised in any part of the supply chain in terms of using a dirty product. And we are just a key part of that. When you look at mining investments, and this is certainly a very, very large scale one, I think, and we've just touched on it, the industry outlook for green steel, and we're not moving away from steel, it is by far the biggest metal being consumed globally, and no substitutes can come about, particularly cost-effectively. So it's a movement that is gaining momentum and is irreversible, in my opinion, and we're part of that. The project status, again, we're major projects defined by federal government. We're also a critical project defined by the New South Wales government, and we're also part of what the South Australian government has come out publicly, which is their green steel strategy. So we're an integral part of that as well. The project specifics themselves, if you compare us, for example, to other similar magnetite iron ore projects, we're a lot softer. Softer means less energy, and it turns out with a very high-quality, clean product, which is in high demand by the sort of customers that we're talking to. The location itself, it's better to produce it here than it is to produce it in Africa or South America or the like. The geopolitical risks are obviously fully understood and controlled and lower than those sort of locations. The access to infrastructure is basically there, and that makes it very attractive. And finally, I guess the team associated with who we've been able to pull in and we'll be able to use on this project, I think it's first class, and that will deliver the outcome that we want moving forward.